Hi, I'm Sabrina Soto. I believe the best conversations are with friends who are really able to open themselves up and share their lives, both the good parts and the bad. You're going to be listening to some of those candid conversations and hopefully gaining some insight to help you redesign your life from the inside out. Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
I'm so excited.
So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit of your background?
So my name is Adrina Davitian. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I have a private practice called Serenity Therapy and a group practice called Citrine Counseling Center.
Been there.
We specialize in relationships. We specialize in EMDR therapy. We specialize in narcissistic abuse recovery. We are all of it, anxiety, depression, and my baby is trauma. My baby is relationships.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit about my background. I'm a licensed psychotherapist.
I wanted to say check, 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 check into all those things, but
all of it.
So I've talked about EMDR on the podcast before. And so I met you. That's how you and I met. Mm-hmm. I did EMDR therapy with you. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what EMDR is?
Yeah, EMDR, I mean, it's blown up. It is basically, it's an evidence-based therapeutic modality, and it stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing Therapy. It is basically an approach. So, okay, the way I like to explain it is when we go through life experiences, painful life experiences, there is a high emotional response that we experience, right? And sometimes that emotional response is too overwhelming for our brain to process. And so what ends up happening is it gets stuck. It gets stuck in our body, it gets stuck in our brain. And so what—
And what do you mean, when yes. you mean it gets stuck? What does that mean?
Yeah. Life experiences that we go through, right? Good, bad, there is an emotional response to all of it, right? But when we experience something that's traumatic, it is the experience in itself becomes so overwhelming where it is basically maladaptively stored in our brains and our bodies. So the best way to explain it is, I like to explain it is, it's like your inner children or whoever that has gone through that experience, right? So like, let's say you went through a childhood trauma and that little girl basically is like, okay, this is too painful. We're going to hold on to it. But children are so resilient, right? And so they find defense mechanisms to survive it. But what ends up happening is that inner child basically lives in you.
So that's what getting stuck means.
That's how I define it.
Right. Like a pattern perhaps that you brought on because of that trauma that you keep repeating.
Mm.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. Basically, it's like you don't want to repeat that trauma. You don't want to repeat the experience and the feelings that came from that traumatic experience. And so it's like your body holds on to it as a form of protection.
Got it.
Right? But there is a neurological component to it because when we are processing life experiences, right, in our REM sleep, our brain goes, you know, the REM sleep, right side, left side, your eye is moving left, right, left, right, right? You know when you've seen someone go into that deep sleep and you see them, their eyes moving really, really fast?
Yes.
That's when our body and our nervous system is like fully rested. And that's when usually life experiences, all of that is supposed to process and we're not holding on to stuff.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so with EMDR or with painful life experiences, sometimes where it's too overwhelming, that's what gets stuck. And it's too overwhelming for your brain to process. So it's like, oh, I'm going to maladaptively store this here in the event you go through this again. We don't want you to feel that way. But you basically live your life holding on to this experience.
Okay.
Right? So going back to EMDR therapy, what EMDR therapy is it is basically, I like to say it's like tricking the brain into thinking it's in REM sleep.
Right.
Bringing up the trauma you went through, desensitizing it and reprocessing it by incorporating what's called bilateral stimulation. Bilateral stimulation is either a light bar, watching your eye, you know, watching the light bar go right, left, tapping, right? So left, right, left, right, basically stimulating the right and the left side of your brain so that your brain thinks it's in REM sleep, bringing up the trauma, desensitizing it while you're fully present under the care of a clinician, and they walk you through it to the point where we start to reprocess it.
Right.
So no longer is stuck in your brain and your body.
So, but if it's EMDR, eye movement,
yes.
Why is it also tapping and sometimes the beeps in your
that you're listening to.
So it's evolved, right? The therapy, initially, it was created by this clinician by the name of Francine Shapiro back in the 80s, and she was working with veterans. And while she was working with veterans, she noticed when she would talk about these traumatic experiences, their eyes would be moving left, right, really, really fast. So she developed the concept with the light bar based off of what she was seeing. But as the therapy evolved and grew and it became an evidence-based approach, they noticed, okay, it doesn't have to just be a light bar. The tapping left, right, the sound, hearing it left, right, does the same thing to the brain.
It makes sense to me because I did it with you mm-hmm. and it worked. Mm-hmm. So for me, and I'm just letting all the listeners know what happened to me. No yes. problem. But I had it.
Let's
I
get
had,
vulnerable.
Well, let's. I thought that my fear of abandonment came from one something that happened to me. And then after EMDR, I realized it went way before that. And I don't know if you remember that session, but I was like, oh, my mouth was open. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that this all makes sense now. Mm-hmm. So I know personally that it works, or that I don't know how it works.
Right.
Like electricity, I don't really understand it.
Right.
But
but it does.
But it does.
Yeah.
And how often do you see, or how many sessions do you see somebody go through in order to see an aha moment? Is it sometimes just one session or does it take multiple times?
It's a really good question. It's so subjective. It really depends on what the individual wants to work on. So if a client comes in and let's say they had this traumatic car accident 3 months prior, and now they can't get into the car, or every time they see a white car, because the accident happened in a white car, they start to feel nauseous, right? Then I don't think I can't guarantee it, because they may have experienced a car accident when they were younger. But if solely we're working on that car accident that happened 3 months ago, it is going to be only, I don't know, a few sessions versus, I'm saying few sessions because again, it's very subjective, but it'll be less than someone who wants to work on something that happened to them when they were a child, because now we're talking about childhood experience. They were 12 years old and all of these life experiences, and now they're 42 years old, have occurred. So now we have a lot of reprocessing to do.
Yeah.
So it's not just desensitizing that experience, it's desensitizing it, the initial experience, the trauma, and then reprocessing all of the other life events that you've had that solely come from your inner child protecting you from not going through that again.
Right.
But all you're doing is you're reliving it over and over.
Right.
So to answer your question, it really depends. The other way I like to define or explain EMDR therapy when someone asks me that question is, it's like one talk therapy session compared to an EMDR session would be, one EMDR session would be like six talk therapy sessions.
Agreed.
Right? So it's like really intense therapy.
Yeah, it wasn't easy.
Yeah. So it's so that's the other.
But it was quick.
But it was quick, right. So someone will be in therapy for a year, talk therapy. And I, by no means do I not think talk therapy is beneficial. I do that also. But oftentimes I get clients that'll say, okay, I know what my issues are. I got all the tools. But why do I still feel activated when I see
X, Y, and Z?
X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now we got to do the trauma work. There's something stuck.
Why did you choose to do the beeps for me? Like, how do you choose what you do for clients?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but we tried the light bar first for you.
I don't
you.
Remember that.
Yeah. It's preference, right? It's preference. I have clients that I do online EMDR sessions with, and it works just as well. And then I have clients like you, or past clients like you, that really value the in-person, and that works for them. So it's more of a preference thing.
Yeah.
We tried the light bar for you and you felt like, oh, it's hard for me to see the image. I prefer to close my eyes. So the sound helped you see the images more clearly.
You have a good memory.
I do. I really, I have a lot of pride in my memory.
But you're right, because I came to you for childhood trauma, but there was also a situation that I came to you for that just happened. Mm-hmm. And I thought walking into your office that there was no way that the session was going to help me calm down, because I was so charged and I couldn't believe the magic that happened, because I walked in a nervous wreck. Mm-hmm. I actually think I was shaking.
Mm-hmm. You were.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were hyperventilating.
Yeah, I sure was.
Yeah, yeah. If we're going to put that out there, if we're just going to be really honest, I mean, you gave the consent, let's just go there.
Let's go. And I walked out.
Yeah.
a completely different person.
Yeah. So for you in that, may I go there? Okay. For you in that particular situation, granted, the experience you had was, there was a lot of history to it. However, you had just been through that particular day, you went through something very traumatic. And so that was a very recent trauma for you that had just happened. So that we didn't need to reprocess anything. We just needed to desensitize that trauma. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So because it was so fresh, all I needed to do was help your brain process that particular experience so that it didn't get stuck.
Right.
In with the, all the other things that was stuck with the underlining thing that was going on for you.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's the really incredible thing about EMDR. The bilateral stimulation with EMDR therapy really, really helps the individual process the things that are stuck, because your brain and your body can't do it on their own.
Is it something that someone can do by themselves at home?
No.
No. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a DIY. I love a DIY.
I know you love a DIY. It's not. I mean, even as a clinician, I mean, I'm certified in EMDR. You don't have to be certified in EMDR, but you absolutely have to go through the training. And it's a very extensive training. And it's so incredible. I mean,
can children do it?
Absolutely. Okay. Can children receive it?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
No, I know children can. Hey, Olivia, can you give me EMDR tonight?
No. Olivia, come here. Let me train you so you can help your mama.
Yeah, it was very beneficial to me. And you say a lot of people are going through it for trauma. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about trauma.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
And I want to talk about inner child stuff, because I think a lot of that came up for me in EMDR. Mm. I didn't even realize, and I talked to another therapist, my friend Shane. He's been on the podcast a few times. We've talked about inner child work many times on the podcast. And I hate to admit it, but I would admit 6 years ago, I didn't really understand what inner child work meant. Mm-hmm. And now, going deeper and deeper, I went to the Hoffman Institute last year. Mm-hmm. It is so important to dive into that work to be the best version of yourself now. Mm-hmm. How do you find that inner child work sort of rears its ugly head in people in a daily life, or especially in romantic relationships?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is, I mean, that's exactly what our inner, the painful experiences that we've been through when we were younger, is if we do not address them and we do not bring awareness to those experiences, it is what's going to cause us to be in unhealthy, toxic relationships. So what I mean by that is, basically, to answer your question, it plays a big role. When we go through these experiences, right, you have to understand, as children, we solely depend on our caregivers to guide us and direct us on what the world looks like. So no matter how wonderful a parent is, no matter what white picket house situation you look in, parents are going to mess up, and that's okay, right? But with that being said, that is the perception we have as children of what the world is going to look like. So for example, I'm going on a tangent, but for example, if a child is in recital and their parent is always late, but all of their friends, moms and dads come and pick them up on time, or caregivers come and pick them up on time. I mean, the parent is late because they're going to work, so there is a legitimate reason. What is that child going to interpret at some point? There's a level of trauma there, right? Yes. It's a little T is what we call it, but there's a level of trauma, because now this kid may potentially develop the belief, if the parent doesn't sit and talk to them regularly, that you're not good enough for me to be on time.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yes, I do.
And so now, and a child, they, although they're very resilient, children are very, very, very resilient and find ways to survive and protect themselves from emotions, et cetera, they have this belief that they don't know how to articulate to their parent. Now they're growing and they're an adult, and it's like, oh, wait a minute. I need to prove to myself that I am worthy. I need to prove to myself that you'll always be on time, whether you're aware of it or not. Oftentimes, mm-hmm. It's very subconscious, right? And so now we're going to gravitate towards the partner that is super, super busy, super, super occupied. And although they love you, they're not always on time. They're prioritizing other things, but that's so familiar to you.
That's home.
That's so familiar to you. And that's chaotic for you, but that's also familiar. But so guess what? Now you, and as an adult, are going to try to conquer what you couldn't conquer when you were a child.
Yeah.
You couldn't articulate it to your parent when you were younger, but you're an adult now. You still don't know how to articulate it because that inner child is there, right?
Right.
but you're going to fight. You're going to fight it because you want this person to change for you.
Right. Because if they change, that means mommy and daddy love me.
Boom.
Yeah.
And therefore, the world is a safe place.
Yeah.
But all you're doing is you're basically reiterating the belief that you have about yourself, that you're not good enough by attracting a person that's so busy.
Yeah.
Because you honestly don't even know how to articulate to them what is going on for you.
So when you
internally.
Go, yes. So when you do the inner child work and you see, oh, there, that's the connection. How mm-hmm. do you stop from continuing to either stay in that relationship or attract that same partner?
Yeah. I think it's so important. Like I'm such a firm believer in when I especially work with couples and there's this constant issue. I'm such a firm believer that when an individual spirals and then that spiral, you know, that spiral triggers you, right? So you have a couple and one person does something and then that upsets you. And then now you're spiraling and then you're getting sucked into their spiral, right? I understand both parties play a role, but at the end of the day, you are responsible for yourself. You are responsible for your own emotions that come from the trigger. You didn't cause the trigger, but what happened to you? You're responsible for your emotions. You're responsible for your behaviors, right? Mm-hmm. So when I have these types of dynamics, when I'm working with couples or when I'm working with an individual, I always tell them, well, what was coming up for you in the moment? I don't know. I was getting so mad. I was yelling. I was getting angry. Okay. And then I felt so bad about it. So then I apologize. And then like, now you're in this dynamic where it's like, okay, you did something, you gave in to someone, and now you're in this basically trauma bonding dynamic.
Right.
Right. So
ooh, we have to talk about trauma bonds.
Trauma bonding, right? And so what I say to that individual is, let's explore what that trigger did to you. What does that say about you as a person? What are you saying about yourself as a person? Well, it's not me saying it. It's them saying it to me. I understand that, but you're in that dynamic. You're fighting with them all the time. You're arguing with them. You're trying to prove something to them. What can you prove it to yourself? Do you feel like you're good enough?
Ooh.
Oh, gosh. Well, then that reminds me, it makes me feel like I'm like 6 years old when my mom was never on time. Like, okay, let's focus on that inner child. Let's bring attention to her. Let's pay attention to her and give her what she needs. You are the only adult that can give that to her. Mom can't do that to you for you anymore. Your partner can't do that for you anymore. So we need to connect to her so that she's not feeling like she needs to step in and fight your battles for you.
Right.
So that's how we address inner child.
So then if you heal that inner child and that trauma.
Yeah.
Then do you get out of that relationship or you just don't get mad that they're late anymore?
Yeah, no, that's also a really good question. At some point, if you're noticing yourself and you're basically like, okay, this is my boundary. I'm not engaging in your shenanigans. Like, I love you. I care about you, but I'm not going to allow this to upset me, even though you're triggering me. At some point, when you set firm boundaries and your partner is still, you know, acting the way that they're acting, you're going to get tired of that.
Right.
Here's the thing is because you're not giving in to that, you're not in this trauma bond with them anymore, where it's like, I'm not sucked into your stuff where I feel bad because I said something mean to you, mm-hmm. right? Like I did me, I'm taking care of me and I cannot tolerate this anymore. So then you leave.
Forever?
Well, if that relationship isn't working for you, yeah. But with that particular person.
Yeah, I guess because
it's
then.
It's easy said than done, by the way.
Of course.
To say that.
Of course.
It's a lot of self-work. It's a lot of inner child work. It's a lot of effort and energy. And I don't think that relationships can't work, but because you can choose to still stay in a relationship while your partner is constantly triggered. But you just have to have better boundaries.
That's right.
So you can maintain somewhat of a healthy relationship.
I have noticed that like working on inner child stuff, taking care of my traumas, little T's and the big T's. Mm-hmm. I'm just attracting different people and both romantic and other things just because of my self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps a lot. And I'm not saying that a child is ever, it's not their fault that they went through the traumas, but healing that part of you, understanding yourself more, I think catapults you into other levels of more healthy relationships.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because were you going to say something?
No. Well, I'm always going to say something. It's a podcast.
Well, I was going to say because, you know, the reality is when you truly work on yourself and you really bring attention to the areas that, you know, need attention, such as the 6-year-old that was abandoned, the 15-year-old that was, you know, X, Y, and Z, right? When you bring attention to them, those versions of you are no longer stepping in for you to basically help you live life.
Right. Like you would say to me, you're letting the inner child take, like, drive the bus, and yep. she doesn't even have a license.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Because every time you would get triggered, or generally speaking, every time someone gets triggered, there is something coming up for you.
Right.
What are you triggered? You're triggered because that reminds you of something.
Right.
You're triggered because there's something painful and you're being protective, you're scared, you're fearful, whatever it may be, right? But what's truly being triggered is the younger version of you taking your wheel and basically trying to say, I got this. I've been through this before. I don't want you as an adult to go through this.
Right.
So you're no longer present as an adult.
Yeah.
And this is why I think inner child work is so beneficial. Trauma work in general.
It really is. I can't believe I didn't even know about it
until
semi-recently. Mm-hmm. So speaking of traumas and trauma bonds, you talked about the difference between a trauma bond and love. Mm-hmm. That is a subject. I mean, we could probably go on an hour for that. But how can you tell? What are the telltale signs? Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest sign is if you're in a relationship and you want your partner to change for you, that's a number one sign.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Change anything?
Mm-hmm. No, change like the big issues in your relationship.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you want your partner to change for you, why not me? Why won't they change for me? I want them to change for me. That comes up all the time.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. I just got chills because I've never heard it put so like in such a concise way.
Yeah. Layman terms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Adrenae terms.
No, I love when you speak to me like I'm a 5-year-old. No,
stop.
I love it. No.
Like, stop.
But it's true. Okay, so if you're trying to change the person for you, instead of just accepting them for who they are, it's usually a trauma bond.
There's an element of a trauma bond there.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. When the other thing is when you're trying to fix someone.
Ooh.
When you're trying to, you're staying in the relationship because you see so much potential in them. And it's like, okay, I see all the potential. I see it. I see it. I see it. But it's like, hurt. See it. Hurt. Like, okay. Yeah. You're trauma bonded with this person.
And is it usually because that person reminds you of one of your parents?
Absolutely. Or your caregivers. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Dude. And here's the thing, you know, you've probably heard me say this before. I say this a lot is I'm a firm believer that in relationships, there is no perfect relationship. In relationships, our partners bring out the worst and the best out of us. Right. So it is a blessing to be in a dynamic where you're challenged by your partner. However, the problem is if you're not self-aware and your partner's not self-aware, or if one of you guys isn't self-aware enough, then you're basically going to be in a constant loop, right?
Yep.
And that's at some point you're going to get exhausted from that. And at some point you're going to say, like, I really need to do something about this.
But I think that some people who are stuck in trauma bonds, and you tell me, it's like, oh yeah, they're just challenging me. Mm. And they could stay in that loop because it feels like, oh, they're just a challenge and they're just mirroring me. And it's my soulmate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if it sounds like that kind of challenge, I think that's okay. But when it sounds like, oh my God, I'm so tired of this, but like I love them and I know that they see my potential or I see their potential, but I'm so tired of this. Why does it have to be so extreme? Why does it feel like someone punched me in my gut? Then yeah, that's not a challenge anymore.
Because it feels...
That's torture.
It's torture.
That's not that type of tea.
Right.
That is trauma. I mean, torture.
Torture.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
a different tea.
Yes, a different tea.
It must get really confusing in therapy. You guys have so many teas.
There's so many freaking teas, damn it. Why does it have to be a tea?
Yeah, and so people who are in trauma bonds, like I've had friends, I've had situations myself, it feels like almost a withdrawal. When you're out of it, right? And is that just because of it's just childhood stuff?
Well, think about it. When you're in a relationship with someone, and especially when you're trauma bonded with someone, they reject you, whatever's familiar to you from your childhood. They reject you, they abandon you, or they're like constantly calling you and suffocating you, right? That's familiar for you. So there is an element of dopamine that comes up for you, right? Because when you were a kid, that was your understanding of love, right? Like when, you know, mom or dad or the caregiver wouldn't show up, but eventually they would show up. Oh my God, they love me, right? Like, oh my God, even though, you know, abuse would continue. Oh, but they still came back, right?
Yes.
So you have to understand that there is an element of dopamine that arises for you when you're in that type of dynamic. And the minute that person is like, let's say, shuts you down, or the minute the person is not suffocating you, then your cortisol levels go up, right? Where it's right. like, ooh, my stress level, like what's going on? What did I say something wrong for the person that's like the anxious style, right? Like anxious call. Did I do something wrong? That's your cortisol level going up, right? They have anxiety. It feels like a physical thing that's happening for them. And then the other side of it is for the individual who's avoidant, when the person is not calling them all the time. When I'm mixing them up. Anxious, they are calling all the time. Avoidant, they're running away right. all the time, right? And so for that person, that's familiar for them as well. And so when someone is all up in their business, like a helicopter parent when they were young, that's very familiar for them. And when that's not happening anymore, their cortisol levels go down. So they now look for a new person that's anxious.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes. And speaking of anxious yes. and avoidant and attachment styles, and there's also disorganized. And what yeah. was the other one?
Secure.
Secure.
Yeah.
The good one.
Yeah, yeah. The one we all aim to be. Yes.
Is it possible to be different attachment styles in different relationships?
Yeah, absolutely.
You could switch.
Yeah. Well, so disorganized is avoidant attachment style. Avoidant anxious style.
So it's a combo.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are people that... when, you know, attachment styles again are developed when you're young, right? So there are individuals when they become an adult maintain their anxious style, or people maintain their avoidant style. And then there's people that will be avoidant and anxious, the disorganized style. So yeah, it depends on who you attract. You're basically going to attract someone who also has an attachment issue. It just depends on what type of attachment issue that person has.
So anyone who's not secure always attracts somebody who has an attachment issue?
Anyone who's not secure will always attract someone who has an attachment issue.
Yeah. That was the question.
I mean, that's a good thing to explore as far as statistics goes. I honestly think a person who is secure can attract someone who maybe has an attachment issue, right? I think that they can attract someone because let's say like they've known each other mm-hmm. and they're good people. But I think that person who has the attachment style has to have enough self-awareness. Otherwise the person who's secure is not going to deal with it.
That's right.
So that's where I think a person who's secure can attract someone who has an attachment style, if there is a level of awareness to it.
Yeah.
I have a client right now who is a male and he's pretty secure. I've been doing, you know, therapy on and off with him for a good 2 years, and he has really worked through his stuff and he's definitely secure, but he has attracted an individual who is very anxious. But we talk about it all the time. He's very aware. He's so good with his boundaries. And he's like, and she says, I'm recognize it. Like, I'm working on myself. And she truly is working on herself.
Yes.
So there is a lot of hope for them.
Self-awareness goes such a long way.
Key to success.
Right?
Genuinely, compassion and self-awareness are the two biggest things we all need in order to even explore healing.
Compassion for yourself. Yes. Yeah. That's another thing that I dealt with too. Mm. Because for me, I grew up, you know, both my parents are immigrants and I'm self-made, but just being a go-getter and pushing myself all the time. And I would just get to a point that sometimes on my own, in my own head, I would beat myself up for not doing mm-hmm. things perfectly. Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time mm-hmm. to have self-compassion mm-hmm. for not doing things right all the time. Mm. And it just, I mean, and I hate to say that, I'm 47 years old and I probably just started doing that like a year and a half ago. Mm.
For the record, she does not look 47.
Oh, thanks.
I want to put that out there. But, you know, yeah, thanks for sharing that. And I know you've talked about that before in your other podcast episodes. And I think it's, you know, there is no right or wrong to when we are ready to heal. Right. And so it's okay that you're 47 years old. And are you happy now?
Yeah.
Okay. Why are you happy? Because you've worked on yourself.
Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for therapy.
And
you too can find my level of happy. I'm just kidding.
Oh, no, gosh.
Because it took, you know, it's all, we talked about it.
But can I ask you something?
Yeah.
This current place that you are in your life in general, where you are in your life, doesn't it feel so much more like, doesn't it feel 10 times more? Isn't the feeling amplified because you've been through
yes,
pain?
100%.
Right? So like, I feel like we go through these life experiences for a reason.
And yes.
Yeah.
Need the contrast.
Yeah. We need the contrast. You need to know like what it feels like. You know, we talked about this earlier, to fall sometimes, to know what it feels like to really get up, because absolutely. That feeling feels so freaking good.
100%. I actually was talking I had a coffee meeting yesterday with somebody and he had asked me something about my childhood. And I answered it in very just matter of fact way. And I saw him getting upset and he was like, how could you forgive? And it's like, oh yeah, no, I worked on that. That was so 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's not linear healing. Mm-hmm. I've talked about that too. Mm-hmm. It is okay. It's up and down. And I'm just, you know, I feel like I've done a lot of work, but mm-hmm. It's not easy.
No, it's not. It's not a journey. Easy.
And it
everyone
is a journey.
Has their own unique journey. And I think I love that we're talking about this because I feel like it's so relatable to so many people. Sometimes people feel so hopeless. And yeah. So I feel like your story is powerful. It gives people hope.
Well, that's a thing too about social media and even just being in the profession that I am of homemaking on TV. It's mm-hmm. It looks like I'm perfect. Everything I'm doing is perfect. Mm-hmm. You're not seeing the shit show that's happening mm-hmm. behind the scenes or how I rolled up in there mm-hmm. that morning. I have hair and makeup people. It's like, it's all pretend. Mm-hmm. And all social media, for the most part, it's just a pretend land mm-hmm. that we are mm-hmm. trying to say to compare ourselves to. Mm-hmm. And I do have trauma mm-hmm. and I have been through a lot of stuff. And I feel like we all are going through this. Mm-hmm. And it's not fair I think more people are being more vulnerable now than ever. And I'm mm-hmm. glad that there's been a shift in social media for that way. But I wish it was more. And I could even speak to myself saying that, you know, it's, mm-hmm. Vulnerability leads to connection, but there's also that scare. I get scared of being shamed.
It's scary.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm human at the end of the day, and I resonate with that because it is a scary world we're living in. We didn't have, I didn't grow up with a phone. I didn't grow up with social media. Not until I became an adult.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for that. Even though I may have, experienced other types of painful experiences, I didn't experience the social media effect where it's like amplified.
Judging,
and like bullying, even for adults, not just children, it's not just like a one group of like six people. It's like one group of 10 million people.
That's right.
And
that's where the self-compassion comes in. But mm-hmm. did you see that post? I think it was a few weeks ago with Julia Roberts. Did you see that?
I sure did.
Okay. So
with her niece.
Yes. So anybody who's listening, she had spoken about how she posted a picture with her niece and they were playing cards. It was the morning. They were having like a family mm-hmm. moment. Mm-hmm. She didn't have makeup on. Like mm-hmm. who the hell wakes up and puts, other than my grandmother, mm-hmm. rest in peace. Mm-hmm. But she was just having a normal moment and people were like, oh, she looks like shit. Mm-hmm. She looks bad. She looks, you know, and she said at her age, mm-hmm. for some of Julia Roberts mm-hmm. that it got to her. Mm-hmm. Imagine what it's doing to the children.
It's so bad.
But even I'll admit it, like sometimes if I post things and I get, for the most part, thank you, everybody. It's just been really, they're nice. But there's always one a-hole out there mm-hmm. that'll DM me something weird.
Right.
But I'm human too, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to, it takes us a level of self-compassion to just like, give ourselves like breathe. Mm. This isn't real. Mm-hmm. This mm-hmm. person, mm-hmm. they may not even be real.
Right.
And it's not, it's this self-awareness that you have and the self-esteem that you have that's going to get you through
yeah.
that kind of stuff.
It's tough. It is, you know, so easy said than done, but it is possible. It is 1000% possible to create our own internal boundaries that we can honor to protect ourselves.
In every relationship.
In every relationship, friends, colleagues, romantic partners, family members, even our, you know, closest loved ones,
yeah.
Children, parents. It is so possible, but you got to work on yourself.
Yes.
You got to address your own internal battles because no one can fix it but yourself.
That's right.
A therapist can guide you there, but you got
to
do the work.
I know. I asked you to fix a few things and you, I can help you, but you're going to have to do the work.
This is how you would start. Can you fix me? I just need to know, can you fix me? You
just come home with me.
This is expensive.
No, but it's true. I mean, like the self-awareness, the self-compassion, you fixing yourself, it all boils down to everything that we were talking about. The traumatic relationships that you're in, having boundaries, though, I feel like the more that you work on your own self-esteem, mm-hmm. the more you're not going to put up with all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. That all of those things just sort of fall away because it no longer fits in the new world mm-hmm. that you're living in,
yep.
right?
Yep, 100%. 100%.
You're filtering it through. Okay, wait, last
yes.
question.
Yes.
So EMDR, is yes. it okay to use that in conjunction with other modalities like narrative therapy or... Mm-hmm. tapping or whatever?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that it really depends on the therapist. I feel like every therapist, the other EMDR clinicians I speak to, everyone kind of does their own thing. I mean, you can go by the book and be very structured with it. And then there's other therapists, such as like my previous therapist, who we would incorporate talk therapy in between. And so I really like that model where I incorporate talk therapy. So I'll ask a client when they come in, how are you feeling today? I'll do the regular check-in. And then I'll say, can we go back into EMDR or do you want to process anything? And if they want to process it, we'll do talk therapy for the day. So that can be narrative therapy. That could be psychodynamic. It could be a little bit of cognitive behavioral therapy. But for me, my biggest thing is if we are opening up a can of worms doing EMDR, you know, it's important for them to know that we're opening up a big can of worms. So at some point, we do have to come back and close it.
Yeah.
Talk therapy, I don't think would be enough.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So yes, I do think you could do that. The other thing I think is important that is important for people to know is EMDR is a very specialty type of therapy. It is one, basically, memory network at a time. It is one traumatic experience, one trauma memory network at a time. So if you're coming in for attachment stuff, if relationship stuff, we're just working on that. We're not going to be working on like the car accident, the, let's say the narcissist relationship, like we are solely working on the, let's say, attachment stuff, right? Yeah. So it's like, it is a very, there is a structured element to it.
It's a la carte.
It's a la carte.
Right.
Is very a la carte. So I do have clients that'll come to me specifically for EMDR while they're in their regular talk therapy. So that's also something to be mindful of.
And can you talk to, just before we get off?
Yeah.
How people can find you and about your own podcast, Two Friends, Two Therapists.
Yeah. So Two Friends, Two Therapists. It's also my baby. I do it with my really, really good friend. Her name is Natalie Jambazi, and she's also the co-founder of our group practice called Citrine Counseling Center. And Natalie and I started off as friends, and then we became colleagues, or we became colleagues and then friends really quick. So her and I are basically friends, and we just talk about therapy stuff. Like we work through our own stuff through each other. And so one day we decided, why don't we just start recording ourselves? So Two Friends, Two Therapists is about two friends, two therapists, living life, going through life experiences. We incorporate the psychology part of it, basically. So that's basically what our podcast is about. We primarily do talk about relationships. We talk about traumatic experiences. So it is a really fun listen. I'll recommend it.
For anyone who's listening, in my show notes, as always, I'll put how to get in touch. Your Instagram, which, what is it now?
Right. Sorry. So my Instagram is adrene_therapy.
Okay.
You could find me there. You could find me on my website, which is adrenedevtn.com. So my first name and last name.com. Or
on the podcast.
On the podcast.
All of it's going to be linked in the notes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
So fun.
This was so fun.
We did a lot.
We did a lot.